Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the Church today. The image of God within the embryo is the topic of today's show with your host, Pastor John Ehlers.
Hello and welcome to the Lutheran Inquisitor. I'm your host, John Ehlers. I'm pastor of Christ Lutheran Church in Orpington, Kent. I'd like to invite you to come along to one of our Sunday morning services. We meet every Sunday at 10:30 a.m. If you don't live in our area, however, why not go to our website, lutheran.co.uk, and find the nearest Lutheran congregation to where you live? Click on the directory and go pay them a visit. I'm sure they'd love to see you and welcome you warmly. I'd also like to thank you for your prayerful and your financial support of Lutheran Radio UK. We wouldn't be able to operate our worldwide outreach if it weren't for your prayers and for your support, so we are deeply grateful to you. We are very pleased to welcome to the Lutheran Inquisitor this week Dr. Callum McKellar. Dr. McKellar is the director of the Scottish Council on Human Bioethics, and he is also the author of a new book called The Image of God, Personhood, and the Embryo. Dr. McKellar has agreed to spend some time with us today to discuss that topic, and welcome, Dr. McKellar.
Good morning.
Lovely to have you with us today. Now, this is a very interesting book. I've been reading it, and I appreciate it. But can you tell us why you started to write this book? What drove you to do so?
Well, the book, in a way, has quite a long history. It started in my mind around the year 2006. At the time, I was an elder of the Church of Scotland, which is the national church in Scotland, the Presbyterian Church. And we were debating embryo research, stem cell research, at the General Assembly of the Church of Scotland. The General Assembly is when it takes place every May for about a week. It's been taking place since the year 1650. And it's the supreme body of the Church of Scotland. And at the time when we were debating embryo research, I realized that there was a lot of gaps, in a way, and there was a lot of holes in how we were thinking of the theology of how we should respect, how we should consider human embryos. There has been some debate in the past relating to abortion and so on, but things have moved on since then, especially with respect to being able to create embryos just for research, as is possible in the UK, creating new kinds of embryos mixed between animal and human, like fertilizing animal eggs with human sperm, which is also legal in the UK. So how should we consider these embryos, especially from a Christian perspective? And because of all these gaps and holes in the theology, even, I realized that when we were having our debate in 2006 at the General Assembly, we weren't really doing this from a really informed perspective. We were just cobbling together different views, sentiments, reactions, and then trying to make some decisions in the General Assembly based on these reflections and sentiments and so on. There wasn't really anything solid. So that was the first reason why this book was written, to try and address this this need for more theology relating to the embryo. The second reason really is to help pastors and other people really interested in these kinds of topics. I mean, I realize even in my own church that pastors don't really they don't really address bioethical issues, and even sometimes moral issues in general. And one of the reasons why people don't, or pastors don't preach about these topics, is because they feel insecure. Some of them have never done science at university. Sometimes they're even afraid of the reaction of their congregation. So these issues are often seldom addressed in sermons or in the pulpit. So this book was really written for pastors and other similar kinds of persons to try and feel more confident about maybe preaching about these kinds of issues, and giving them the theology but also the science behind it in an understandable way. I did try, I don't know if I've managed, but I did try to write this book in lay language, which was not always easy.
And you mention in the book that there's been a lot written on the image of God. There's been a lot written on embryology.
That's right.
But you tried to combine the two, and I think you've done a really nice job. Can you tell us how you've tried to do that?
Well, there's been a lot written over the last millennia about the image of God and why are we so special compared to, say, cows and dogs. I mean, there is something special about human beings. Often in the past, it has been about people who are this image of God has been discussed relating to people who have been born or who have at least been, you know, children who can be rational and think through different issues and know that they have a free will and so on. However, there's been very little written about the image of God in embryos. Now, embryos have also been discussed quite a lot in the past. Around 1980s and 84, there was a very famous report in the UK called the Warnock Report, which laid down quite a lot of guidelines, which then the Westminster Parliament adopted. So it looked at embryos more from a scientific perspective. But these two big aspects of looking at the embryo and the image of God that can be reflected in this embryo is what I tried to address, because it hadn't been addressed anywhere before.
Well, could we start with that first idea of the image of God? And again, there is still quite a bit of debate in the churches about what that means. Can you give us, I suppose, a bit of history? I mean, it goes all the way back to the creation in Genesis.
That's right. I mean, there'll always be a debate about this image of God, I expect. The reason being is this image of God is something that reflects God. And this image, and because it reflects God, it'll be something that we'll never fully understand. There's something mysterious about this image of God, and it will always remain mysterious, even in 1,000 years' time. The big three categories, I should say, or the big three chapters of this image of God in the past, at least, have been the functional aspects. So what we can do, how we can reason, the fact that we have free will, and the fact that we can love. So these are the functional aspects. Then you have the substantial aspects. And sometimes these are related as well to what we can do, to the fact that we are reasonable. But the substance can also be looked at from the fact that we are human, that there is something human in these human embryos. And then the final aspect that's often been portrayed in the discussions are the relational aspects, that some people say, for example, that we have this image of God because we can have relations of love with other people, and we can have relations of love with God. So these were the three big categories that have been discussed in the history of this topic of the image of God. There have been many others, and they are not mutually exclusive. I mean, a lot of these aspects are present and are really important. However, when you come to the embryo, this is where it's a bit more new in a way. What I've been trying to present in the book was that even these relational aspects, I mean, embryos don't have a brain. They don't even have a heart. So, I mean, they can't think. They can't have relationships with other people. Embryos can't do anything. They're cells that are put together in an organism. Of course, they are human. But what does human mean? Why is human so important? So what I was trying to do is look at these embryos from two new aspects. One is the incarnation and the fact that Jesus Christ was incarnate as an embryo. He was not just incarnate after birth. He was incarnate as an embryo. And that is really important. So Jesus Christ came to earth as an embryo, as a very vulnerable and very small entity, a very small person. And the second way I was trying to present this image of God in an embryo is the fact that it was God that created this embryo. God creates each one of us as persons. And the fact that it is God that creates us and not, say, another deity, but it's really the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords who creates us, that also gives us the image of God. And that is extremely important. And I was trying to reflect that in the book.
And you you make a really good case about how important being is and personhood is within that idea of what it is to have the image of God. Could you expound a little bit on that as well, please?
Yes, so there's a lot of confusion at the moment, especially in our modern Western society, about what a person is. Actually, it's very interesting when you go back and look at, I mean, I'm not a theologian, but I learned all this from reading books and through some of my friends. But when you go back and understand and look at where this concept of personhood came from, it didn't come from the Enlightenment or something else. It really came from the fact that the theologians, the church fathers right at the beginning of Christianity were trying to understand the different persons in the Trinity. Before the Christian theologians were trying to determine what personhood was, personhood in the Roman times, in the Greek times, just represented the mask of an actor in the theatre. So an actor just personified a role in a way. It's only, as I said, just after this that in the early church that they really tried to understand what is a person. So the whole concept of personhood, as we understand it sort of today, has a Christian heritage. It's only at the Enlightenment that they sort of kidnapped this concept and said that personhood is only present if you are able to be rational, if you are able to have free will and so on. But that only came in after the Enlightenment. So the real origin of personhood is a Christian concept, and it comes from the Trinity. So the second issue that you were talking about, this concept of being, instead of having to prove that you are something, that you just are something because God created you as such, that has a very strong resonance in the Eastern Orthodox Church over centuries, actually, that they always understood a person as a being, as a whole being, that is body, soul, and spirit. So we are always one. We can't separate the soul from the body or the body from the soul. We are embodied souls and ensouled bodies. So I tried to reflect that as well in the book. But that's the heritage from that is Eastern Orthodox, the Eastern Orthodox Church, that were able to preserve this kind of thinking through the centuries.
And you also mentioned earlier that a lot of pastors perhaps don't preach or teach on this subject because they're scared.
Yes.
They're not scientists. And that's me. And I found your discussion on what an embryo is to be very, very helpful, because today I hear a lot of people say, oh, an embryo, well, that's just a collection of cells. It's just a blob of these things. But you talk about how an embryo is different from a collection of cells. Can you explain what an embryo really is and why it's significant?
Well, an embryo is an organism, a whole organism. Now, this concept of being whole is extremely important because, in a way, it goes beyond the scientific understanding or even creation. God is whole. God is the Trinity, so the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, but he is whole. There's nothing missing in God. God is complete. So I was trying to understand this concept of wholeness in the embryo as well. There's nothing missing in the embryo. The embryo is complete. And this concept of wholeness is extremely important in theology, but it's also, I would say, extremely important in science. So that is what's important in the embryo, the fact that the embryo is whole and is complete. Now, I speak to many, most of the time, actually, I speak to non-Christian universities and conferences, and this understanding that an embryo is just a pile of cells comes up again and again and again. But what I do then is try to remind all the people at this conference that they themselves are just piles of cells if they are from a purely scientific perspective. I mean, I used to be a biomedical research scientist. And so when I look at a human being from a purely scientific perspective, we're just piles of cells made out of 70% water. So basically, we're just drums of water with two legs and two arms. And in 100 years' time, we'll just be piles of dust and piles of ashes. So from a scientific perspective, we are absolutely nothing. We're just as much as they see the embryos. But it's only because we have this, from my perspective, at least, this Christian faith, this belief that human beings and embryos are really special, and they're really special because they are made in the image of God, that I've actually come to this conference to speak to them, in a way, because there's no reason why I should come to just speak to big piles of cells who are going to become piles of dust and piles of ashes in the future. We must believe, and it is only a belief, that human beings are special, that embryos are special, and from a Christian perspective, we are only special because we are made in this image of God, and we are created from His love. That is the only reason why we are so special on this planet.
It was also very interesting, as I was reading your book, you spend some time at talking about how an embryo develops and how it actually is complete from the time almost of fertilization. Can you give us a little bit of insight on that and how important that is in our understanding of the image of God in the embryo?
Okay, so an embryo is whole and complete from fertilization. Why? Because an embryo, when an egg gets fertilized by a sperm cell, there is the formation of an organism. An organism, as the word reflects, is organized, is completely whole and complete. There's nothing missing. So when the egg is fertilized by the sperm, even the entrance point of the sperm into the egg starts to create an order. So that means when the cell then divides into two about 24 hours later, the place where the cell gets divided is related to the entrance point of the sperm cell into the egg. And then when it continues to divide, there's always an order present. Now, scientists are still studying all this. I mean, at the moment, they're studying all this in mice and others, because they can't really study it on embryos. It would be in many countries actually prohibited. So scientists are still trying to understand this order, but there is certainly an order present. And then when these cells continue to divide, they become, after 8 weeks, a fetus. And in a fetus, you already have the beginnings of arms and legs and a head and so on. So again, there's a development present. There's a continuous development present. There's not one single moment when you can say, well, there's a specific stage there. It's a very a continuous development which is very gradual, which then eventually comes to birth, and the child is born, and the child continues to grow. And the cells continue to divide until a child is adult. And then the cells, actually, a lot of them start to die. I mean, we start to lose some of our neurological cells at the age of 19. So that means every one of us who's older than 19 are starting to lose brain cells, and that's for good. They don't get replaced. But there is a continual process all the way until death. And I believe that something happens after death. So as a Christian, I believe that life doesn't just stop at death. Life continues through death and after death. And when God sees when God sees each one of us, He doesn't just see us from, say, birth until death. He sees us from creation. That means from the very moment of fertilization, and then for all of eternity. So even this time on earth is not a very will not be a very long time considered to our whole existence, because our whole existence will go on for eternity. Actually, our time of earth, our time spent on earth will just be considered a sort of blip in our whole existence, in a way, a wonderful existence with God in all eternity.
And there is a great biblical precedence behind that. You think of Jeremiah, God has known me since the foundations of, foundations of the earth. And
that's right.
Psalm 139,
yes,
where the Lord knew us as we were knit together in our mother's womb.
That's right. And there's this relationship that God, it's the relationship that God has with us that's important. It's not the relationship that that we can have with God that gives us the image of God. It's the relationship that God has with us. He creates us from His love. He sustains us from His love. He created us to be loved, and He created us with the capacity to love others, and to love God in return. And that's why we exist. And it's not the length of time that we live on earth that matters. I mean, a lot of embryos are going to die. Actually, all human beings are going to die. I mean, you are going to die. I'm going to die. And we'll probably live different lengths of lives. So it's not the length of life that matters. It's not even the quality of life that matters. What matters is that we are loved by God, and we can respond. Those of us who are self-aware can respond to God. But those who cannot respond to God, like embryos and like people with very severe mental disabilities, God still loves them, and that is why they are made in the image of God. And it is God that created them. I should have mentioned as well right at the beginning that that there's different ways of creating embryos. I mean, we talked so far about an egg being fertilized by human sperm, but you can also create an embryo by splitting an embryo into two, and that's what happens naturally with twinning. And in the future, there might be possible to create embryos through cloning. And as I mentioned as well, briefly, it's also possible, and this is where it becomes all very difficult and very complex from even a theological perspective, to create an embryo from taking a human egg and fertilizing it with a non-human sperm.
You've talked and used the word creating a lot in the last few minutes. How does that go down when you talk to people in these conferences that probably don't believe there is a God who is a creator? How does that go down, and what do you mean by creation? Can humans create?
No, well, humans cannot create persons, at least. Humans can procreate persons, and that's really important from a theological perspective. Human beings only participate in God's creation, and it is God that creates each one of us. There's a mystery here, and I think this mystery is also I believe this mystery is also reflected in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. When a child is brought into existence, it is God that creates this child every single time, and parents only participate in this creative process. And that is one of the reasons why we are created in the image of God, because it's God that creates us. Now, and that's why the word create is so important. And even when you go back and look at Genesis, there's different words for creating in Genesis chapter 1. There's a word that only God can do, and that's when and that is used when God creates the universe, but also when He creates men and women. There's other words that are used in Genesis 1, but they have more general meaning of making or forming. But in a specific context where only God can create, that is the universe. God creates the universe, and He creates human beings, Adam and Eve. So this word creation and create, to be able to create, has an extremely specific but an extremely important theological context. Now, in our society, we use the word procreative to procreate and to reproduce in a sort of equivalent way, but again, they're very different. From a Christian perspective, when we procreate, there is a love present between the man and the woman, a love that is really exclusive, and a love that is expanded unto the child. So the child, in a way, in procreation, is first of all, the child is made sort of in the image of the parents a little bit, from a certain perspective, in a way. But the child is also the love of the parents made flesh. So when a man and woman come together in one flesh, a child results, not all the time, but some of the time, and the child is the expression of this love between the parents made flesh, made one flesh. So that's really important. The word reproduction, on the other hand, that is often used now in society, has no Christian context whatsoever. Reproduction, it comes from the word production, which has sort of even an industrial context. It reflects as something industrial. And often there is no love present in bringing children into existence through reproduction. And that is what is so sad, I believe, in our society. I believe every child should be procreated, and but they should not be considered as just a sort of reproduction where there's no love present amongst the people bringing these children into existence. Children have been brought into existence in our society now with only one parent, and children have been brought into existence because maybe the partner has been raped or something like that, and that's incredibly sad. Nobody should be brought into existence in such context, but they are nowadays being brought into existence without any love. And as I said, that is what we characterize as reproduction.
And in a sense, is that not a way of dehumanizing reproductive management, reproductive control? It takes out the human aspect, and as you say, almost makes it more mechanical.
Yeah, well, this is what becomes complicated. What is human? I mean, as a scientist, this is one of the big concepts that we're trying to study at the moment. We're already bringing to existence human Z's. Well, not human Z's, but animal human combinations. They've tried to create human Z's in the past. I mean, Stalin was trying to do these experiments in the 1920s. So when these beings are brought into existence, we don't even know what is human. And this is going to be a problem that's going to exist more and more in the future when they say integrate human brains into robots. And again, this has already been thought about, because it'd be a lot more efficient to have a human brain in a robot than, say, a silicon brain. So what is human? How do we characterize human? Is humanity only reduced to genetics? These are the big issues that, again, there's a lot of discussion taking place, and we haven't really resolved the problem. I don't think we'll ever resolve the problem. Bringing a person into existence is something sort of magical in a way. You know, 9 months before you had nothing, and 9 months later you have something amazing with 10 fingers, well, most people have 10 fingers, and so on and so forth. And there's something fantastic about bringing people into existence, something wonderful. And I think with all these new reproductive possibilities, this wonder has been taking away. Children are becoming more products. And in the future, when parents will have a lot more choice in what kind of children they'll have, and this is something that we're working on again a lot in Scotland, children are going to be seen more and more as products and less as being wonders in themselves. And the fact that God gave us a gift of being able to procreate in the same way as he created. And I think this is really important, actually, because God could have created, 10 billion people all at once in one big bang, in one big go. But God never, he didn't decide to create 10 billion people all in one go. What he decided to do is enable procreation to take place. And I think that's really important, because in procreation, parents maybe understand, maybe have a glimpse of the wonder of being able to procreate a child, which reflects God's fantastic action, God's wonderful action in being able to create humanity in the first place. There's a parallel there, I believe, which is extremely important. And when we try to take away, for example, the love between the partners when they procreate, when children are brought into existence without any love, that doesn't reflect in any way the wonder that God had, that God experienced, and the love that he experienced when he created the universe and humanity in the first place. So it's not by accident that procreation exists.
Dr. McKellar, we'd like to thank you for helping bring some insight into this very interesting topic of the image of God within the embryo. But unfortunately, we've run out of time for this week. I'd like to invite you and our listeners back to join us next week as we carry on our conversation.
Thank you for listening to The Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.